November 12th, and this is the Civil War Podcast. It was on this date in 1863 that Kate Chase married William Sprague. The wedding was the social highlight of Washington during the Civil War. Catherine Jane Chase was the first child of Samlin Portland Chase. Born in 1840 to his second wife, Eliza, Kate was named after Chase's first wife, who had died in childbirth. Eliza herself died when Kate was only 5 years old. Chase remarried for a third time just a year and a half later, but his new wife did not get along with the little girl. Kate was sent to Henrietta B. Haynes Finishing School in New York City. She spent 9 years there, learning music, languages, and social graces. Her father explained, "In a few years you will necessarily go into society. I desire that you may be qualified to ornament any society in our own country or elsewhere into which I may have occasion to take you. It is for this reason that I care more for your improvement in your studies, the cultivation of your manners, and the establishment of your moral and religious principles than for anything else." At school, she received frequent letters from her father, which indicate that he was ignorant or unmindful of Kate's messages of longing and loneliness, and were instead distant and didactic, full of critiques of her writing, encouraging her always to improve and correcting her grammar, wording, and style, refusing to let her come home if her grades were not to his liking. He also took pains to tell her of his growing fame. Upon leaving school, she became her father's official hostess. She was the First Lady of Ohio and head of his house in Washington. Her father had recently been elected governor of Ohio and had his eye on the White House. Kate did all she could to assist him, helping with official correspondence and speeches, discussing strategy and hobnobbing with Clay, Webster, Calhoun, and Sumner. She redecorated both the Chase home and the Chase's wardrobe, throwing lavish parties with strategically chosen guest lists, which became hot tickets in Washington society. In these pursuits, the Chases regularly overextended their modest income. No expense was spared in their quest for political success. When they moved to the capital in 1860, she became known as the city's most eligible catch. A reporter wrote that no other maiden in Washington had more suitors at her feet. Future President James A. Garfield described her thusly: "She has probably more social influence and makes a better impression generally than any other cabinet lady." She was as impressive a politician as she was a hostess. Diplomats and statesmen felt it an honor to be her guests, and men of letters found that they needed their keenest wits to be her match in conversation, wrote one reporter. The spirited young woman met William Sprague in 1862 at a ball. Sprague recalled his first sight of her. "You became my gaze and the gaze of all observers, and you left the house, taking with you my admiration and my appreciation, but more than all, my pulsations. I remember how I was possessed that night and the following day." Sprague preferred to do the possessing. He was fabulously wealthy, heading a textile business founded by his uncle, a politician with little conscience whom he considered a role model. The boy himself took no interest in the running of the business, but gave no personal attention whatever to any of the business concerns with which he was connected. He drank and dallied, fathering an illegitimate child in his 20s. These character flaws did little to stall his political ambitions. The financial success of the business made the Spraggs a political power in Rhode Island. A large percentage of the population was on the company's payroll. And when the Republican candidate for governor was seen as too much of an abolitionist, the 30-year-old Sprague abandoned his family's Whig affiliation and ran as a Democrat. He spent $125,000, and campaign mutterings suggested the streets of Providence were paved with gold. When the war broke out, the boy governor raised and outfitted a regiment of troops and put himself at their head. Lincoln's secretary, John Hay, described him as a small, insignificant youth who bought his place. He led them to Bull Run in the peninsula, then resigned and joined the Senate. The Sprague cloth mills were expanding to accommodate the demand for uniforms, and the family wealth grew. William Sprague saw in Kate Chase the chance to gain through marriage the social status and refinement that his money had been unable to buy. The Chases saw an opportunity to gain political influence and a large bankroll for future presidential campaigns. Their wedding was the event of the decade in Washington. Presidential aide William O. Stoddard wrote, "The social event of the past week was the wedding of Senator Sprague and Miss Chase. The tableau, as they call it, at the marriage itself was charming, and the dress reception in the evening and the informal one next day were entirely pleasant. The presents were magnificent. Silver, pearls, diamonds, etc., to the tune of 100,000 or so. The worthy young couple certainly have a very fair start in life, and hosts of friends to wish them joy and success." Sprague had ardently pursued Kate's hand, but he proved an inattentive husband. He had flings with other women and drank heavily, humiliating her at social functions. Kate was also disappointed to learn that her husband was not taken seriously as a politician. Sprague's money failed to buy Sam and Chase the presidential nomination in 1864 and 1868, so Kate consoled herself by using it to buy Canonchet, an 80-room wooden house she had constructed on Narragansett Pier. But she fled the house for 3 years alone in Europe to escape his drinking and philandering. Her father tried in vain to reconcile the couple. When Sam and Chase died in 1873, Kate was bereft and alone. She was the daughter of a politician with failed ambitions and the wife of a failure in marriage, in politics, and in business. Sprague's textile business failed in the financial panic of 73. The company had expanded too much, and its failure threatened to involve the whole state of Rhode Island. Kate's financial situation was obviously threatened as well. When she failed to pay a tenant for the vegetables he delivered, he stopped paying rent. She sued him, taking as her lawyer the New York Senator Roscoe Conkling, a notorious womanizer known as the Adonis of the Senate. Soon she had taken him as a lover. Society whispered about their closeness in the Senate gallery, and a full-on scandal erupted when Sprague had found them in bed together. The New York Times later reported that the senator jumped from a window, and after him came the governor with his old Civil War musket in his hands. She filed for divorce. Sprague countered with a charge of infidelity. Her social and political reputation was in tatters. Kate took her daughters and moved back to the Chase family home in Washington. Desperate to make ends meet, she began selling off the furnishings. In her later years, the once brilliant and beautiful Kate Chase was reduced to managing a small dairy and poultry farm, selling eggs door-to-door to get by. Her son committed suicide, and her two oldest daughters moved across the country, leaving her with the youngest, who was mentally disabled. She died in 1899, aged 58. She lies to the right of her father, for whom she served so long as a right-hand woman.
You've been listening to the Civil War Podcast, a weekly podcast researched, written, and read by Aaron McGuire, with music by Tom Nagy. Thank you for listening.